It's a bunch of short little statements. Proverbs 10:1, the Proverbs of Solomon. And often the verse will stand all by itself on its own. Sometimes you can throw two or three of them together. Most of them pretty self-explanatory. Some we will park on for a little while. Verse 17, a wicked messenger falleth into mischief, but a faithful ambassador is health. I remember touching on that last week. An ambassador is somebody who represents another country. And in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20, it portrays Bible-believing Christians as ambassadors of Christ. Because our citizenship would be in heaven. This world is not my home. I'm just a passer through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. And so we're just down here being an ambassador for Christ, speaking for Christ, by quoting his scriptures and trying to bring people back into reconciliation or good fellowship with God, because 99% of the people you rub shoulders with every single day are an enemy of God. Now, they wouldn't say that, but their actions show it. They are walking directly contrary to what God wants them to do. And they wouldn't raise their, you know, I had a letter from some woman. She's, you know, believes she can lose her salvation, all that stuff. And so then I asked her how many sins she's sinned, you know, has sinned since she got saved. And she said, I haven't willfully sinned since I got saved. And her definition of willful was, I haven't raised my fist into towards heaven and say, God, I am not gonna do what you said. Well, okay, if that's a definition for willful sin, 99% of the people in the world haven't done that. Willfulness of sin is just you do what you want to do. You know, the old Burger King ad, have it your way, have it your way. Proverbs 14:14 says, the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own way instead of God's way. And so a faithful ambassador of Jesus Christ, we are to try to bring people in fellowship with God so that they can be at peace with God. But the vast majority don't care. Now, when you read through the New Testament, you'll see some very odd behavior amongst people who come across Jesus Christ, and you don't see much of that behavior in churches because, you know, when you're in this building, you know, I guess the devils are a little bit more tamed down. But if you do want to see some of that behavior that Jesus Christ experienced, then get out in the streets. Street preach. Pass out tracts, hold up a scripture sign, especially at college campuses. And you will see some of the most odd behavior. Like in Purdue, one kid stood behind the street preacher about 50 feet and dropped his drawers. And so everybody who's looking at the street preacher, they see the guy dropped his drawers, and they're laughing, and he didn't look behind them. And they just sit there and laugh. He's in his boxer shorts. So what? You know, bunch of idiots. Just plain idiots. Okay, and that behavior is demonstrated when you get out there in the public. Now, I have not preached at gay parades, queer parades. Don't plan to. But I know guys that do, and they say you talk about getting spit on the face and all sorts of behavior. One street preacher, he was explaining some street preaching, and he and two other guys were in Washington, D.C. preaching at a gay parade. And he said they had, those three guys were just preaching away, one at a time, but preaching. And they had right in front of them the policemen with all the riot gear, all the horses and everything just standing between them and the queers. And if the cops were not there, they would have literally killed those guys. And he said, we were just sitting there smiling and laughing and enjoying ourselves, and all these people just hate their guts and want to kill them. Just like in Sodom. And you see, and that's when you see what people are really like. You go out and knock on doors, and you'll see a little sign at the front door, you know, all friends are welcome at our house. And you start talking to them. As soon as you mention Jesus Christ, the smile goes off their face. And they quickly, oh, I'm busy. I got to go do something. Oh, there's a phone ring. You know, oh, I'm in a hurry. You know, all this stuff. And people always try to hide from God, just like Adam and Eve did after they sinned. And that's the pastime of man, trying to hide from God. And probably the best way to hide from God is through religion. People in religion try to put God in a box. But the Bible tells us that what we have as ambassadors of Christ, we get out there and go after them. Nice hearing that rain. Verse 18. Okay, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. Okay, poverty and shame literally is from somebody who refuses instruction. If you're going to do some sort of task, some sort of thing you want to do, you need to search out somebody who's an expert in that field and ask them questions, learn from their experience, and then you can go, you know, if you're going to do the task, you know, if you're going to be a jack of all trades, try to do your own work. If you're going to live your life and you're going to hire all your work out, you are going to be ripped off like crazy. I mean, take your car to a car, any place where they're going to work on the engine, any place. They're going to put parts on there not necessary because they make more money that way. You have somebody check your appliances or anything like that. You know, you got to be right over these people. Watch what they do. What I do, if I don't know what I'm doing, like with a washer or a refrigerator, you know, we call this guy, he comes, $40, and then I watch everything he does, and he kind of teaches me next time I ain't calling him. And then you find out how easy it is. Often it's just little tricks of the trade. Down in Rensselaer, we used to have this water heat system where you had the baseboard heat and the water comes flooding, you know, through there with the boiler and everything. And that thing was getting old, and I knew we was going to have to replace it, so I wanted to put a forced air heating system in there. And I checked on prices from a local heat place where just for parts was going to cost around $9,000. And so I had witnessed to watch some heating and cooling people, and I looked at them and I said, if they can do it, I can do it. And so I put the whole system in the church down there for half the cost, $4,500. And I think it's worked beautiful. All I did, I'd go to the local heating guy, bought the parts from them, ask him, what about this, what about that, what about this? He'd tell me, I'd go do it. Not that I want to do it anymore, but at least I did it once, and it worked fine. See, a lot of times you'll see that Americans are habitual liars about things. Several years ago, Reader's Digest did a little study. Some of you may have read this, where somebody traveled the whole country, or much in the country, before they went to a mechanic shop, car shop, they disconnected spark plug number one wire. That's all they did, just took the first wire off the first spark plug and drove in, and they ranged anywhere, they had like a handful, four or five, that said, oh, your plug wire's off, we just put it back on, that's all you needed. There's less than five that did that. And one bill ran up to $700. Oh, okay. Well, if you looked at most of the pastors, you could figure out why I did that.
It's, you know, you got 1,000 people that
somebody. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I was putting in that heating system, some salesman came in at church and he asked if the pastor was there, and I said, "I'm him." He said, "Man, you Baptist preachers, you guys work. We can't get our preacher to do anything." I said, "Oh, well, that's how it goes." So, okay, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction. Okay, if you're going to do something, whatever issue in life, find somebody older, wiser, and ask them questions. Buy a car, get somebody to check it out for you. Find somebody. Now, if you don't, you're going to learn from your own experience. Experience of the hardest teacher. It says poverty and shame. That's what you're going to experience. You're going to be ashamed of yourself and a bad deal you did. And it's going to cost some money. Now, spiritually speaking, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction. Spiritual poverty. If a person's saved, they die, they go to heaven, they got nothing to show for it. They're standing there naked with nothing because they refused the preaching, they refused instruction, and they will be ashamed of themselves. Titus 2 verse 8 says, "Sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that's of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you." If you can ask certain questions to certain preachers and it embarrasses them because you know something they don't know, it's good for them. Embarrass the tar out of them. Look at them and say, like Jesus did to Nicodemus, "You're a master of Israel and don't know this? You went through 4 years of Bible college and 3 years of seminary and you don't know this? What you been doing?" Jeremy Wilson, a young fella down in Louisiana, when I first met him, he was a Southern Baptist, wanting to go to Southern Baptist Bible School, and he was a John MacArthur fan at the time, New King Jimmy. He got asking me a bunch of Bible questions, and I was pretty slow at answering them for him, but then I started laying things out for him, and he asked where he should go to Bible school. I said, "I don't recommend any." At that time, I knew he couldn't handle PBI. And he said, "I figured you'd say that. What's your suggestion?" I said, "Stay home, stay under your dad's authority, and study at home. I'll start sending you the tapes." And that's what he did. About 6 months, when he started doing that, he did some chalk drawings for a couple people, a couple churches. One was a NIV church. And he drew a little picture in a black light. He had a Bible and AV 1611 written on it. I mean, he was just as green as could be, but he wrote that on there. And the pastor saw that, and he said, "You're a fascist." And Jeremy answered a couple of his questions, and this guy had been pastoring for 8-9 years, and the pastor, and he said to Jeremy, he said, "Well, evidently you know more about this than I do." And he'd only been studying now at this about 4, 5, 6 months. 6 months tops. And this guy was in the same homeschool group we were in, so I know the appeal authority thing that they do. You know, I was playing with it. And I wrote the guy a letter, and I said, "Pal, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You've been pastor for 8-9 years, and this kid knows more than you do about manuscript evidence, and he's only been studying for 6 months tops." I said, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself and get out of the ministry and make an honest living for a change." Of course, he never responded to the letter, didn't expect a response, but that's what he deserved. And if you listen to that, you might grow up. Why would you write something like that? Look at the next half of the verse. Proverbs 13:18. "But he that regardeth reproof shall be honored." The idea there is that the Bible is going to chew us out. It's going to reprove us. And that's why people don't like to hear Bible preaching. Gets them under conviction. It steps on their toes. It bothers them. They get nervous about it. And that's what Bible preaching does. But that's good for us. "All Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness." Now, once a person develops a taste of Bible preaching and he understands the natural thing of reproof comes in there, then it becomes just very easy to say, okay, Bible's right, I'm wrong. So what? I learned something. Am I arrogant enough to think that, me? Was I taught wrong by somebody? Who, me? Of course we've all been taught wrong, especially if you've been in a public school. Been taught wrong from kindergarten to senior. And they might have got something right in there by accident. Okay, and we just have to understand these things. And it's nothing. We've all been there. And so we just accept these things. We just accept that when we read our Bible, it's going to show us where we're wrong. God's right, I'm wrong. Now, some people just have a hard time with that. But once you develop that attitude in your mind, it makes it much easier. And you just accept a reproof, okay, that's good. You see, an attitude like the Apostle Peter used to have. Peter and the Lord be doing something, John the Baptist or John and James around there, and the Lord do something, and Peter would pipe up, say something, and it would be wrong. And then the Lord said, oh, what about this? And then Pete would do a 180 just like that. He would change immediately. When the Lord got washed in the disciples' feet, Peter said, you ain't washing my feet. And the Lord said, oh, if I don't wash your feet, then you're not of mine. He said, oh, well, in case we're going to do it that way, then wash me from head to foot. See, he just did a 180. There's nothing to that. But people's pride gets in there. Their dirty, rotten, stinking pride. You know, you see this on a job all the time. One guy says it's supposed to be done this way. The other guy says it's going to be this way. And they sit there and argue about which way it's going to be done. Who really cares? Just get the job done. Actually, on the job, it's the boss who calls the shots. And I don't care if the guy's work doing the work can do it in half the time. And it can be done better. If the boss says do it this way and it's going to take more time to do it, then do it his way. He says he's going to lose his money. That's his choice. Just do what he says. Now, you can appeal to him and say, well, this is what I've learned. And if he still says, I want it done this way, okay, no problem with me. I ain't going to gripe about it. Especially if you're a subcontractor. You do a job, and then this is the way they want it done. And you suggested, well, it should have been done this, you know, this is a better way to do it. No, I want it done this way. And then they come back and say, well, we learned you're right. Well, you got to charge more now. Make a little more money that way. You did what they told you to do. And you see, people don't realize the line, the chain of authority. And don't talk back to the one above you. Just do what they say, no questions asked. Okay, because they're going to reprove you when you do wrong. Okay, so verse 18, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. 19, the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. Okay, the first half, the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. This is why you want to teach your kids work. We're in a day and age where the kids don't have self-esteem. They just so feel so bad about themselves. Well, they've been given everything in life. They haven't earned anything in life, so they don't have any manhood about them, as far as the boys go. Teach the kid to work. You know, work is not a dirty four-letter word. If your child is old enough to get the toys out of the box, the toy box, they're old enough to put them back. That's work. Teach them to put them back. And what you do is you teach them that work is fun. You're getting something accomplished. Kids nowadays are taught to play. Now, obviously, we know the little ones, they learn by playing. But when they get old enough to where they can work and make some money, make their own money, teach them how to, save their money, teach them how to create things. You see, the TV has ruined the creative mind of children. It just ruined them. Most youth groups today are nothing more than entertainment. The youth pastor got to put a clown suit on, put a big red nose on, and entertain the little munchkins. I refuse to do that. You know, in Colorado, we'd hear several times from the kids until they learned not to say it to us, and we'd do something. It's, well, I'm born. I look at them and I say, that's because you're a boring person. Well, that, they quit telling me I was bored. And then them boys started learning how to goof off, and we had a church that was on Rattlesnake Mountain, they called it, because it had obvious reasons. When they first put the building in that, I think they killed 20 rattlesnakes in the playground in the summer. When we were there, the rattlesnakes were getting less and less. But one time we took a trip down to Texas to a youth conference, and as usual, the bus breaks down. And so I'm trying to run and get the parts fixed for the bus, and I come back, and the guys had already caught 3 rattlesnakes, skinned them, and had them out to dry. I mean, they were busy doing something. They'd jump over them, take a bicycle, and try to jump over the rattlesnakes. Then they invented paintballing before it was invented. They'd be shooting each other BB guns. And they'd get on that mountain, they'd be having BB gun fights. No mask, no nothing. And I tell you, they were tough kids. And the last year we were there, they played 8-man tackle football out in Colorado instead of 11-man, because some of the schools in the plateaus were so far distance. And like in our school, we had 13 boys in school, junior high to high school. And we had 13 boys in a football team. No, we had 14 in the school. One didn't play football. And that last year, they went undefeated. Played in a little national tournament in Tennessee. Had a lot of fun with it. But they were tough. Those kids were tough. They had a coach that looked just like Dan Blocker or Hoss on a Bonanza. Just like him. He was a roommate to John Riggins when Riggins was in Kansas University. Carl was so tough. When he was in college as a heathen, he would chew up a shot glass in his mouth for bets. He'd get a bunch of bets going. He'd say, how many think I can chew this up in my mouth? And then he'd chew it up. He was a rough character. Then he got saved. And he's the one that coached those kids until the 1 year, actually the last year he didn't get the opportunity to do that. But he taught them kids how to play football. And 1 week in the year, he would call it David's week, you know, like David's Mighty Men, and he would do everything he could to get those kids to quit that week. He'd have them running, they'd be throwing up. I mean, he would just run the tar out of them. He would never allow any mothers to come up to practice because they'd pull their little darling out of the team. But you see, those were city kids, but yet they had a country attitude to them. And the thing is, you got to teach your kids to work. Teach them to create things. Okay, the little girl, get her up beside you, have her wash dishes with you. Have her do bacon with you, cook. I know it's going to be a mess, but it's good for them. Work right beside you. I tell you, I was so fortunate raised in a farm. In a farm situation, the family automatically works together. In our house, all the boys did the outside work, and the girls did the inside work. And then sometimes they would come and do the outside work, too, but thank God I never had to do the inside work. But we were taught to work. I remember in sixth or seventh grade, one of those, you know, I was a whopping 4 feet, 10 inches tall as a sixth grader. And I got driving tractor when I was in fifth grade. And we had a week off for spring break, and that week I kept my hours, and I put 63 hours in as a sixth grade boy. And it was a hot week, and I came back to school that Monday, and all the kids said, where did you go over there? You must have went to Florida. I said, yeah, I went to the field. That's where I went. I worked. And that's what Dad has to do. We just worked and worked and worked, and it kept me out of trouble. Thank God for that. Kept me out of trouble. I didn't go to parties. Didn't have time to. And thank God for that. But you see, when you develop something, when you make something, when you create something, the desire accomplished. You accomplish something. The accomplishment is sweet to your soul. It gives you some integrity in life. It increases your so-called self-esteem. This is what I did. Okay, and that's why kids nowadays don't have this so-called self-esteem. They don't have any creativity. And they need to be, just put them out in the woods and goof off. Say, to get poison ivy. Well, buy them some medicine. I don't care. You know, just get them out there and just goof off with the thing that's great about animals, having animals, it's a chore every single day. You know, chickens, you know, anything you got. And you have a lot of entertainment with that stuff, too. Okay, so desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, but is an abomination to fools to depart from evil. Fools, Hollywood. Fools. Any of them on MTV. Bunch of fools. Bunch of idiots. Just showing how stupid they are. Okay, it's an abomination to them to depart from evil. You afraid you can't go to parties? Yeah, it's a waste of time. Waste of time, waste of money. You know, nothing's accomplished. Nothing but a bunch of bad memories. Okay, verse 20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise. It rubs off. But a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Okay, a companion of fools, anybody that don't believe God, an atheist. The Song of Fools, look if you want in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes talk about fools writing songs. Oh, let's see. Chapter 7, verse 5. Chapter 7, verse 5. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. One of the biggest fools in our country is Elvis Presley. I mean, he's just a blank fool. You know, the Beatles. That's really dating myself. When I first heard about the Beatles as a kid, I thought it was a bug. I didn't know it was some musical group or somebody yelling at a microphone. You know, I didn't know about all that stuff. Thank God for that. Okay, so Song of Fools. That's most of the songs being written today. You know, it's just a bunch of fools. Their words, those songs, they don't mean anything. It's just crazy what sells nowadays. Okay, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise. So the thing to do is when you look for friends, you look for somebody you want to hang around with, look for somebody who thinks smarter than you. Look for somebody who thinks more spiritual than you. Look for somebody that's going to help you become a better person, draw closer to God. That's why, you know, coming to church is so important. Just hanging around the right people. Your best friends ought to be people in church. That's your best friends. Now, obviously, we got to be a friend to sinners, but not pals with them. You know, I rub shoulders with a lot of guys down in Rensselaer, play softball with the fellas. But I don't get in there and they get telling dirty jokes. You know, I walk away from them. You know, I'll give them some trash, try to get them to think about stuff. One guy offered me a beer a couple years ago when he's just goofing on. He said, Dave, you want a beer? And I said, do I look like an idiot? He just dropped his head, no. I said, okay. You know, they know better than that. This year they're starting to call me Papa Hoffman now. I'm getting to be the oldest guy out there. Just want to rub shoulders with them and be friends to them, but they're not my pals. Now, if they get saved, I want to draw close to them. It's funny, the last game we played down there in Rensselaer, the umpire walked up to me after the game, and he said, "I want to tell you something." He said, "You're probably going to think I'm crazy, but," he says, "being in your line of work, you got to be on call 24 hours a day." He said, "I think George Bush is the Antichrist." And it wasn't that he liked Kerry either. He thought they were both bad. And so we got chatting about it, and I said, "Have you heard of Infowars.com, you know?" And he said, "Yeah, I know about that." And I said, "Well, why don't you come on up to church? We got a lot of guys who know about that stuff." And so that was a blessing. And then I asked him if he talked to Kerry, the guy in charge of the softball league. He said, "No." I said, "You ever talk to him about this stuff?" He said, "No." I said, "Why don't you talk to him? He knows about this stuff." So I brought him right over to Kerry. I won Kerry to the Lord 4 or 5 years ago. And we got chatting about it. But see, all I did with Chris this whole time, he was an umpire. I never complained to him one time. I always thanked him for doing his job. Even if I disagreed with the call, I never said a word. One time he had a bang-bang play, and I ran by him, go out in the field, and I said, "Good call, Blue." That's how they call him. I said, "Good call." And then he looked at me. He thought I was being sarcastic. So when half inning got over, I ran back by him again, and I said, "No, I was serious about that." He said, "Well, I was wondering if he was being sarcastic." I said, "No, I was serious." He said, "Oh, okay, thanks a lot." But you see, that's how you win them. Who cares if he called you out? Don't matter. The world don't stop. Got bigger game. Bigger game. Want to go for these guys' souls. Okay, so it says, "He that walketh with wise men." Jeremiah said in Jeremiah 5, verse 5, "I will get me to the great men." I'm going to find somebody who I think is great, and I'm going to get to them, and I'm going to ask some questions. "I will get me unto the great men, and will speak unto them. For they have known the way of the Lord, and the judgment of their God. And these have altogether broken the yoke and burst the bonds." So you find these people out, search them out, and ask them questions. Old war veterans. Good to sit down and just let them talk. Younger generation, when you get around somebody older, shut up and listen. Just let them talk. Ask them questions. Get them to talk. A lot of great things you can learn in life. And I tell you, they'll appreciate it. Older people are lonely. They want to talk to somebody. And they've got a lot of wisdom. It's a shame when you got the strength, you don't got the brains. And when you got the brains, you don't got the strength. See, and that's how that thing works. And so if the one's got the brains, educate the ones with the strength. It helps both parties out. And then the ones with the strength, they increase their life that way, getting smarter, quicker. And then when they're older, they're so much far ahead of the game. Okay, and that's why it says, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." Don't get advice from your peers. There's a guy named Rehoboam that got advice from his peers. Now, obviously, when you get up, you know, over the 40 mark, that's about all you're going to deal with a lot of times, your peers. But when you're teenage, 20, 21, you know, or up to 30, search somebody out 10, 15, 20 years older than you and get their advice. I tell you, people just, they want to help you out if you just ask them. Verse 21, "Evil pursueth sinners, seeks them out. But to the righteous, good shall be repaid." Okay, so the righteous are dishing out good things to people, trying to help them out, and you get repaid for that. May not be here, may be in eternity. Okay, you're not promised the health and wealth today, even though they do that on TV. It's funny, this Paul Crouch, this guy on TBN, Tex Mars has advertised or has broadcasted that Paul Crouch, he's paid off some sodomite because they had some sort of thing going. And this guy's trying to keep it hush-hush because it's going to ruin his ministry. Well, you could just watch that guy on TV and tell he's a fag. I mean, him and Jimmy Baker both. Just as queer as a $3 bill, just the way they are. I mean, you can't call that the ministry. Can you imagine Paul crouched in the street trying to witness?
Turn to Christ.
That ain't a man, that's a mouse. And his wife, she's got to have stock in a hairspray business and all this makeup she puts on her. Jimmy Hoffa's got to be buried underneath all that stuff. I mean, what a joke. People think that's a ministry nowadays. People are dumb enough to send them money, deserve to lose their money. How ignorant they are. They don't read the Bible. They don't know anything. These people are sitting behind a camera, and they think that's the ministry? Not even close. Okay, so when you do right and you help somebody out, you're going to be repaid. Verse 22, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Now there's one you're going to have to spend some time on. A good man leaveth an inheritance not to the government and the lawyers. Nowadays you got to outsmart them. You got to use the law. And if a good man has, through the years, worked hard and has been frugal with his money, he should have some money accumulated. And his life should count for something, so it's not given over to some public school, some state university. I just can't imagine these people give this money away to these state universities just so their picture's on a plaque. What a waste. But whoever earned the money and they kept it aside, they have a right to give it who they want to. Now, if they have no sort of a way to discipline maybe a wayward child, this is a way to do it. Don't put them in the inheritance. And that's one last form of punishment. Now, what a person needs to do is you need to know the law. Write up some sort of will. Get it signed in front of a notary. We've got notaries here. You don't need to go to the lawyer to do all this stuff. Put your testimony in the will, so when they read your will, they got to read the testimony. You know, slam lawyers in your will. You do whatever you want. Just slam anybody and everybody. It's your last shot. So put all that in your will, and then hopefully you have nothing to distribute. Absolutely nothing, because you've taken care of it before you died. And you can still control everything, but yet you don't want anything to go to probate and let some attorneys in the government get it. And probate is only necessary if there's a large amount of debt. You can privately probate your family's inheritance. You don't need to go to an attorney. He's going to take your money. Okay, and what little they know, the better. And, you know, let's say a grandparent's got some money and they got some grandkids, got some kids. Well, the grandparents should start gifting some of that money to the grandchildren years in advance of their expected death. Obviously, we know when somebody just dies, you know, unexpectedly, that's different. But you ought to kind of be prepared for these things. If you're young, you have children small, you've got to have in your will who's going to take care of your kids. You don't want welfare to get them. Find somebody who you think would be good parents. It doesn't have to be flesh and blood. Somebody's going to raise them up godly. Obviously, that would be best, but not necessary. Now, it's a great honor if somebody asks you, you know, to, if they die, to take your children. And if all the people that ask us, you know, died, we'd probably have to have an orphanage. Fortunately, they're all getting old enough, they're going to take care of their own kids, you know. But the thing is, you've got to be prepared for these things. Okay, if somebody has a property, older man or wife has a property, then they can deed that property to whoever they want to have the property as a joint tenant, meaning They have their names still on a deed with them, and then they put on their transfer upon death under their signature. And then that goes right to that person, no probate, no gift tax, no nothing. They get to keep everything. There's a farm down in Madarieville area. It's called the Gehring Farm. And they had thousands of acres. And when Papa Gehring died, the boys had to sell so much of their land just to pay the gift tax. Lost about everything. You see, that was not well planning. And the laws are there, already built in, so that you can protect your inheritance. And some, I know a lot of Christian ministries, they try to get people to donate their thing to some churches, which is fine too, but I'm not going to go around and advertise that. And so there's a lot of things you can do. Now, obviously, we talked about some of these things in law class. And one of the best things a person can do is to be worthless, but yet control everything. And there's very wise things to do. Now, the rich people, they know how to do these things. Somebody asked David Rockefeller one time, asked him how much he owned. He said, nothing. They kind of laughed. He said, but I control everything. Now, how do they do that? They do it through foreign corporations, and they do it through trust. That's how they do it. And that's very smart. Okay, I think it was Patrick Henry developed a trust back in his day, and that trust is still in force today. You just change directors of the trust, no probate, no nothing. And you're doing the same thing, you're just doing it in a different method, different name. And if you're going to get involved in the courts and the law, you bet you've got to get yourself judgment proof. You can't get involved in the courts and have, you know, a bunch of assets with your names on there, because they'll get them. And so a person needs to be very wise about these things. A good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, obviously grandchildren. And the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Now, doctrinally, that there is aimed at the wealth of the sinners of the tribulation, and that wealth is going to be given over to the people who inherit the millennium. Historically, that was illustrated when the Jews borrowed from the Egyptians before they got out of Egypt. And they used that money, a lot of that money is how they got the temple built. See, so doctrinally, that's how that's applied, verse 22. As far as applying it practically, it's pretty tough to apply that one. 23, much food is in the tillage of the poor, but there is that is destroyed for want of judgment. Okay, the idea is clear. Much food is in the tillage of the poor, meaning there's food out there, he's just too lazy to go get it. It's already out there, he's just not getting it. Things go to waste. But there is that destroyed for want of judgment. Want of judgment is meaning knowing discretion when to get it. 24, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth betimes, betimes often or early. Okay, now there's one where, you know, Dr. Spock told us if you spank your child, it's going to, you know, harm him. Well, sparing his rod hateth his son. If a parent does not discipline their children, they hate their children. Oh, I love them too much. No, you hate them. Your attitude is an attitude of hate towards your child. Teach them. Discipline them. Show them the boundaries they are to stay within. Be consistent on those boundaries. Now, obviously, teaching is before the punishment. Chapter 22:6, where we train our children. Train them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Teach them how you want it done. Most parents just operate in a bully situation. I can yell down the kid. Or the kid is going to do what I told him because I beat him. Okay, and the thing is, we've got to train that child, get them to obey because they love mom and dad, not just because they fear them, even though there's a fine line in there. It's a fine line a parent wants to develop between love and fear. Okay, and so he that spareth his rod hateth his son. It used to be in America, if a young person, a boy or girl, whatever, boy especially, if he smarted off to an older person, somebody 20 years older than him, and the older one just smacked him in the mouth, years ago, when the kid got home and he asked, what happened to you? And the dad found out, then the dad would smack him in the mouth. And that's why kids respected authorities back then. Now they got their rights. Yeah. Now I'm not saying you should smack the kid in the mouth, but I'm saying that he should have respect. Should have respect for authority. But boy, they're a bunch of smart alecks nowadays. And these young ones, boy, oh boy. So, I think the tape's off, isn't it? I'll tell this story. Several years, about, let's see, Brent was probably 15 at the time, I think. Maybe he's 14. No, he's 15. And we were playing softball. We were at the park. And a ball went over to this young kid. He's probably 13, 12 or 13. And I asked him for the softball, and the kid ran up the slide and said, "You ain't getting it." Oh, when a kid says that to me, I just want to kill that kid. And I said, "Would you give me the ball?" And he said, "What do you say? You come down here and I'll tell you what I'll say to you." But I knew I couldn't touch a kid. I said, "Thank you," or I said, "Please, give me the ball." And then he took that thing and threw it out in the field. And he'd already annoyed almost every man in that park already. And saw Brent sitting there and said, "Dad, can I go punch that kid?" I said, "Yeah, would you? Please go." So he goes over there, and the kid's in the slide. He drags the kid off the slide, throws him on the ground. Boom, boom, two times right in the mouth, getting ready to hit a third one. I said, "That's good enough." He comes back over. I said, "Thank you, appreciate that." And if that kid learned from that lesson, that would be the best thing that he can learn from. Hopefully he learned from it. But a fool can have 100 stripes put on him and he won't learn from it. Maybe another quick example. When I was in high school, we got a tractor stuck in a field that was a muck, and you just buried a thing. And so Ronnie and I was the only one out there, so we had to go all the way home, get another tractor, and we come back to this tractor and the windows are shot out. Well, we thought they were broke out by the sun. But we found one bullet hole in the frame. Walked over to the road, saw four shells, 22s. Kids are so stupid, they left the shells right there. Then Ronnie walked down to the end, saw a bunch of kids. "Would you see anybody walking down here with a couple of guns?" And a couple of kids said, "Yeah, so and so," and the other kids said, "Shut up." So we found out the two that did it. Dad called the cops, and they said, "Do what you want with them." Dad said, "Okay." And he got a hold of both parents, both kids, and he said, "Okay, here's what's going to happen. The boys are going to pay for the windows, not you. The boys are going to pay for the windows, and then they're going to work with me side by side for 2 days picking up rocks. And we have a lot of rocks in our farm. Every year we pick up rocks in our farm. I get so sick and tired of picking up rocks, we ought to have a harvest of growing rocks." One kid got an attorney. Mother wrote out the check. Didn't pick up one rock, never showed up. Been in and out of jail ever since then. The other kid came over to the house with his dad. His dad said, his dad was an old German. He said, "You're going to do what this man says." And at that time, our dog acted up right in front of dad. Dad yanked that dog around, set that dog down. That kid's eyes is getting big where this man is. He worked with us one day, and he was dragging. Boy, he was dragging at the end of that day. Dad just said to him, "I think you learned your lesson." And that kid has been straightened out. He learned his lesson. Say, but that other one never has. He that spareth the rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth betimes. Let me read that last verse. The righteous eateth to the satisfying of his soul, but the belly of the wicked shall want. Nah, there's too much in there. We're going to stop on that one. Any questions we covered so far? Huh? You figure it out, you let me know. Yeah, I really don't know. Like you say, they're on the same wavelength. I was just reading one in John where it said that Satan put a thought in Judas' mind, and that was to betray Christ. I would say if it's something desperately evil or something desperately sneaky towards the Bible, more the devil, just a common, ordinary laziness would be the flesh. Yeah.